Did we lose Mitch?
God damn mute button, son of a bitch.
You muted yourself?
I did. This technology, it's a mystery. All right, folks, we're going to get started. Welcome to another edition of the No Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. I get so sick of saying this every goddamn podcast. Send a message to my No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. God, I just got to put that on repeat and just like have it recorded so I don't have to say
press
it.
Press play, yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, all right, guys, let's get going. Let's go around the table, say hi to everybody. Bob, how's it going?
Oh, don't pick me first.
All right. Darren, how you doing?
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Come back to Bob. He's sad.
I'm well rested. I'm only one drink in, so I'm coherent. I'm articulate. This is going to be great.
Awesome. Claude Riom's back. Claude's been on a couple of times. We call Claude up when the A-team isn't available. So
we're desperate.
How you doing, Claude?
I'm good. I've even had a drink, so I'm good.
Oh, woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
And what are we drinking this evening?
Oh, Bailey's and coffee.
Oh, you mad?
That's not really a drink. That's a coffee.
Do you have a date later? No ice.
With the TV?
I use a lot of Bailey's.
And okay, Bob, coming around to you. There's only four of us here. How you doing, man?
Yeah. Okay. I'm better now that these guys have sort of broken the membrane. I was looking forward to saying hi to Lenny, and the stupid guy is just not here yet. That's unfortunate, and it'll be fun when he finally does arrive, but until then, has it been as long as it seems to have been since the last podcast? It seems to have been a pretty long time.
2 weeks. A little over. Yeah, I think. No, a week and a half. The last one we did was on a Wednesday, because it was the last time Jason was on, I think.
Only a week and a half? Jeez.
Yeah, about a week and a half. Well, it hasn't been.
But anyway, hey, guys. Hey, how's it going? And right back at you. And let's get to it. Ha-ha.
All right, folks, we're going to have to juggle the talking points tonight, because the first half was intended to give Lenny a chance to piss and moan about the last couple of podcasts that we had that he wasn't able to be on. However, he's having connection issues, so we're going to go on to the last half of the talking points, and if Lenny ever gets his shit together, he can jump in and we'll circle back to the first half. So what we're going to start talking about, we actually, it's ironic. Oh, before we get going, I want to mention, not that anybody cares except me, but tonight is the 50th podcast that we've done of the No Mind Podcast. I'm shocked, actually. Like, 50 podcasts, that's amazing to me. That's a lot of bullshit that's been going back and forth. And it's a bit of a milestone, so I just wanted to acknowledge it. I don't know if anybody else wants to say anything about it. I just thought I'd throw it out there and say, hey, everybody, it's the 50th podcast. So if you want to say something, now's your chance.
Funny enough, it doesn't seem like 50 podcasts.
Sorry, hang on. Darren, you go first, and then Bob after. Go.
It doesn't seem like 50 podcasts, oddly enough. Like going back, I can't even think of half of the things we talked about. Like, that's almost like 50 parties. Do you know what I mean? Like, where you actually got to talk about this stuff.
It seems like 50 drunken orgies. I can't remember.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like we said, like I said when I started doing the things, that it's something that I would have liked to have talked about in the past, where you are sitting around with people after a good class or a grading or something like that, and you talk about martial arts in general and whatever topics sort of happen. But then when you kind of drift away from it, or you move, and or you're training with a group of people that maybe you don't hang out with or whatever, or they don't drink because they're taking it too seriously, and you just don't get the chance to sit around and talk with like-minded people. Like, you've got your other friends, but they don't train in martial arts. So this whole thing was an outlet for me where I was able to sit and have these conversations over a few drinks, and you know, and then it even got more involved where it wasn't just having a conversation. It was actually like changing your point of view and listening to other point of views and really delving into some topics that I never even thought of talking about before. And it's just, it's actually been a great experience. I don't know what anybody else got out of it, but I miss it any weekend that it's not there.
My perspective is that I'm amazed that anyone still has the patience to do this every couple of weeks. I had no idea whether anyone would be interested in coming on. And granted, there's a pretty small circle of people who come on, but they come on very regularly and some irregularly. But everybody comes on and graciously spends their time, and it's, I have a blast every time. It amazes me that we've had this much conversation over the last couple of years. Bob, sorry, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to echo what you said, that it's more a testament to our tenacity and stubbornness to keep on going than it is the quality of what we're saying. But
do you ever thought of working for a PR firm?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And
Trump's looking for somebody.
Do we repeat ourselves a lot? It doesn't seem like
Trump's looking
for
somebody.
But, I don't know. I'm having fun, and I really don't care about whether anybody else is. This is all about me, after all. So there you go.
You know, it's funny. Like I can hear the sarcasm and the timbre of Bob's voice, but he said something to me offline, well into the beginning of these podcasts, and he said, "Look, the only reason I do them is because it's a laugh, and if it stops being a laugh, I'm not going to do them anymore." And I know Bob well enough to take him at his word. So I can only assume, no matter how, defeated he sounds when he talks on the podcast, I can only assume he's actually enjoying himself. I know I am. So again, I'm just amazed that this thing's still a thing. Claude, I know you've only been on, four or five of these things?
Three or four, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you have anything you want to throw in or not. It's fine either way.
Oh, I congratulate you on 50. That's amazing. And when you said 50 hours of discussion, they're a lot longer than an hour most times. And then if you added the edited, you're probably closer to 100 hours of discussion you guys have had. So hats off to you. Or should I tip my glass to you? I think I'll do
that. Oh, congratulations. That's great. Okay. You did a good job.
Jesus. Uh-oh.
There's Lenny.
Wait, hang on, Lenny. Lenny.
What? How are you?
Hey.
Lenny's 31 minutes or 21 minutes late, and all he's got to say is, how are you?
I'm just stumped. Don't.
Don't worry.
Don't.
It's fine. Len, you get to unload all you want over the next hour and a half or 2 hours. So.
Don't.
Lenny, okay. You motherfucker, what took you so long?
Fuck you, Bob. I'm simmering for fucking 4 weeks because all the shit you've been coming out with the last few weeks. And I'm going to give you a fucking aneurysm tonight.
My favorite was the last one where Bob goes, I thought I would miss Lenny, but I really don't.
Yeah, I know. May I raise a question? My question is, who the fuck signed himself in as I'm a master?
That would three
that's
guests.
Darren.
Jesus,
that's Darren.
Oh, you forgot the second part.
I was gonna make that joke, but it was too on point. It was too on
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it's like if you can't think of anything else, you just.
So Len, before we get going, I'm glad you got on before we started talking about the topics. But what we were talking about just before you came on was this will be the 50th podcast of the No
That's
Mind
correct.
Podcast.
Year two.
Yeah.
Year two. Yeah, yeah, I actually 50th. Saw that the other day. My Facebook memories told me so.
I know it's true because Facebook told me so. I don't know if you have any comments about the 50th podcast or not. It's fine if you don't. We can just get on with the topic.
Oh, congratulations.
Not you. Jesus, Bob. Fuck. Sorry, Lenny. Go ahead.
Not much has changed. Not much has changed in my absence.
No. It's well, Rick's not here clicking his fucking pen. Other than that, not much has changed.
I got a pen here I could start clicking.
I swear to God.
Hey, Claude, good to hear you again, man.
Hi, Lenny. Glad you made it.
What have I got to say? I just think it's we've been institutionalized for 2 years now, and long may it last.
You know what? I'm actually... I'm actually curious how, like, how long this is going to go on. I it amazes me that we've done 50 podcasts. But anyway, okay. So
I have two people. I do believe I had a talking stick there. I'm just going to keep Bob and Bob in his box. Jeez, someone's dead to ship. We have two people who engage me every week here at home regularly with loads of rebuttals and talking points, and I'm going, you guys, come on the podcast. And they go, oh, we've got nothing to say, when they've actually got quite a lot to say. So watch this space. There might be 5 more years in this one, Mitch.
You know what, Len, you've mentioned a few times over the last couple of years that you have a couple of people who wouldn't mind, or that you think would like
just,
to come
they just need a prod. I'm going to give you their email directly and you contact them.
I'm not going to start strong-arming people. I mean, if they want to come on, they're more than welcome. But anyway, yeah, no, if, and this goes for anybody, right. if you guys know anybody who wants to come on, yeah, enough of Lenny. If you guys know anyone who wants to come on, absolutely welcome. Okay, so let's,
I want to jump in. I want to jump in a little bit and say that we ought to take a look, an unsarcastic, unironic welcome back to Lenny. Like, Jesus Christ!
Thank you, Bob.
The podcast just expanded by 30% because you're back. I got another target to make comments about. Nice, thank you.
Secretly, Bob, you are pleading the last two podcasts. I wish Lenny was here to answer this.
Yeah, that was me giving you credit, my man. So like, at least acknowledge it.
Well, you kind of contradicted to say, well, I don't miss Lenny in the last one.
Jesus Christ.
Secret. You don't tell anybody. That was sarcastic.
Anyway, I'm only yanking your chain now. Let's get into it.
All right, guys. Let's hit these topics. So we're going to be able to go down in the order they are on the talking points. So, Lenny, look, over the last couple of weeks, you haven't had an opportunity to comment on the topics. And especially the week before last... topics were specifically not geared toward, but certainly would be impacted by somebody running a dojo. We're just going to spend a couple of minutes. I don't want what normally happens to happen, which is the first talking point takes up 55 minutes. But let's go over a couple of the points we talked about a couple of weeks back and get your perspective on it. And we'll see where the conversation goes. So, Lenny, from the perspective of an individual running a dojo full time, you get a student who enters the dojo and up front states they refuse to follow certain dictates or protocols of the dojo, whether it's bowing, going barefoot for whatever reason, any of the other protocols that go along with traditional martial arts, and they say, no, I'm not doing that. How do you react to that?
Okay, well, first of all, I got to kind of clarify that I've never had a student come in and tell me they're not going to do it. It's any kind of... bending of the rules has come from a student who have told me my parents said I'm not to. So it's not the student directly. Now, 99% of the time I kind of get around them, but we have had one instance really where the kids are just, we're not to go barefoot, we're to wear socks. End of story. And they're being told it's for hygiene purposes, and the parents are clean freaks, and this is not just in the dojo, it's throughout. Any sports I've gone investigating, any sports they're interested in, they're going swimming with the school, they're playing football or whatever, and it seems to be an obsessive.
Sorry, they wear socks when they go swimming.
Swim socks, yeah. You don't get swim socks in Canada.
Well, I don't swim, so I don't. I'm not.
I don't know what swim socks. I've never seen swim socks.
They're kind of a rubber sole kind of slip on with a
never
a,
seen
a,
them
a sock kind of cotton sock. Yeah, you have they're widespread here, man.
I've never seen one. Wow. I don't know what pools you're going to.
So, in fairness, what happens in there's all the pools you're hanging out in?
He's spending all his time in the shallow end of the gene pool. Anyway, sorry, Lenny. So how do you deal with the no barefoot thing?
So I kind of have it dictate that I say to kids, if you get the odd kid chancing their arm, I say, okay, look, socks are off because you got to be able to grip the floor. You got to be able to use your feet properly. You're actually going to slip more and you're putting sweat on the floor for others. It's not hygienic from even your point of view. And then I highlight that the dojo floor is swept every day, several times, and it's also mopped every single day with a disinfectant. And 99.9% of the time that works. The two students that are point blank know, I just, if anybody questions it, and the parents have just pleaded with me not to, that they're just terrified, I said, okay, they got to keep the socks on because they got a verruca. Simple as that. And that kind of washes with everybody. And
sorry, Len, they got to keep their socks on. I didn't catch that last phrase.
Because they have a verruca on their foot.
I've never heard that word before. What is that?
Never. You never. Oh my never. God. Okay, it's like a wart.
They're
common here,
okay,
and it's common here in kids. You pick them up left, right, and center anywhere. There's
all right, fair
sweaty
enough.
Feet and bare feet. It's basically a wart. It takes sometimes you can take months of treatment to get rid of it. So if a kid comes in and I say, if you've got permission, if you've got a request from your parents for medical reasons to leave your socks on, that's the only time I will entertain it. And they are the only two students. They've been there for 4 years now, and nobody else has ever chanced their arm. The odd time a kid keeps his socks on, I say, socks off. And he got his on. Well, he's got a medical reason, and it's never questioned then.
So
and that's the only instance of bender rules.
So you've got a student or students there who have been there for a number of years who have been wearing socks for the entire time they've been there. Is that what you said?
Yep. Now,
wow.
What happens now is they rock up in their socks, and if you've got the certain play centers here that are based on trampolines, they're called jump zone, and it's like dodgeball on trampolines, it's obstacle courses on trampolines, and it's a big big attraction here for kids. And when you go to those places, you get handed a pair of socks. They've got grips on the bottom of them, kind of like the surgical socks sometimes you get in hospitals. And what I do is I have a stockpile in there washed every week. The kids get handed a pair of them, put them on you, and I'll take them back off the end of class and they get washed, and that's, they'll wear the socks, so I give them not their own.
Let me ask you something, Len. And we're kind of leaning out of the practical examples that you have more into sort of the hypothetical, but yeah. Are there any rules at the club? Because you just said, look, if you've got a student that has legitimate reasons for not wearing socks or for not going barefoot, then fine, you can capitulate to that and off we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any rules? Let's say you had a student like the one I described, a girl came to the club and she refused to bow. She just wouldn't. Is that something you would capitulate to, or is that something, is there a line that you're not willing to cross?
Yeah, if it's something for medical reasons, I'll bend. If it's personal opinion, there's the door. Go find another club. It's not for you.
That's pretty straightforward.
This next question gets into a touchy subject. Because Bob and I ran a club. It was never for profit, and our livelihood didn't depend on it. So it's hard to have an objective opinion with that circumstance in mind. But I kind of want to broach this. And Len, please don't think I'm aiming this specifically at you. I'd like to get everybody's input. In order
My gentle
to do that,
skin.
Yeah. In order to do that, we kind of all have to put ourselves in the position of somebody who runs a club for profit and their livelihood does depend on it. What happens when your club numbers, and I've certainly seen this at Jushin, I've certainly seen it in Bob, the club Bob and I ran, where club numbers start dwindling down to the point where you can't even afford the rent anymore. Do you start being less militant about those lines that you've drawn because you're concerned now that your student numbers are getting lower and lower and lower? Are you willing then, because your numbers are getting lower, and I want to start with Bob actually, because he and I had some experience with this. Your numbers are starting to get low enough that you're not going to be able to keep the club afloat. Are you then willing to change your line in the sand because you're worried about the club shutting down? Bob?
No. And we closed the club because one of the contributing reasons was that the attendance was dwindling. And it's just better... It's just better to say, all right, let's stop, than to go through what's that word where you compromise.
Okay, but Bob, again, put yourself in the position. Imagine for a second that your livelihood depended on that club. I know that's hard to do. And it's easy to say, yeah, I'm not going to cross those lines when the club, if the club shutting down doesn't threaten your livelihood. But imagine if you can put yourself in that position of someone whose livelihood does depend on the club. You've got no other sources of income.
Wait a second. We ran a club according to the principles that we wanted to run it by. We could have run them by different principles by which to get twice as many students in there. We could have consciously had a business model that was meant to attract more students, and we chose not to do that for a reason.
Fair enough. Okay, Claude, what do you think? Have you ever been a part of a club that was run for profit? And what do you think about compromising principles in terms of keeping the club afloat?
Lenny, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm sorry. In what I've seen over the years, I've never been able to join a club that was for profit only, because that's exactly what I tended to see most of the time, were compromised standards and basically making it a little bit too easy for people to get their next level. But going to your other idea about what would you do, I think it's a deeply personal thing when you're running a business, whether it's a karate club or any kind of business. I've had a few different businesses over my life, and when you start a business, it's your baby and you want it to go. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of entrepreneurs make is they try too hard to make something that will never work. And in the case of a dojo, changing your business model to attract or maintain students, will that really make it better? Or is that just a band-aid to prolong the inevitability that this dojo is likely not going to work? So because I've never had a dojo, it's impossible for me to speak either way. These are just sort of thoughts that are coming across my mind as we're talking about this.
Can I jump in for a second? This sounds like a great opportunity to showcase Lenny as someone who's actually successful at running this
absolutely
kind of business and still retain his principles. So I'd love to learn from him about that.
Absolutely.
Is this my cue to come in? I'm very fortunate that a few kind of the stars have aligned in several ways to help me in that. First and foremost, I live in a rural community, which is it's in the countryside, for want of a better word. Now, time wise, it's not far from suburbia, but people have this stigma, oh, it's too far out, whatever. So the people in our we'll call it a town, it's not a huge place, don't like to travel elsewhere for any services. And 99% of what you get in martial arts schools around Ireland are parish halls or school halls, not very well equipped out. So the first thing I have going in my favour is I've got a fully equipped dojo, matted floors, etc., etc. So I've got a good catchment of that. Secondly, we've got a big community with lots and lots and lots of kids who are crazy keen to get the kids involved. So there's a huge hook on that straight away. And thirdly, and I've spoken about it before, and Mitch has applauded me on many occasions, is that I approached every martial arts style in the neighbourhood and invited them under my roof. So there's now four clubs operating as martial arts clubs under my dojo flag. Even so much to the point that I have jiu-jitsu club, I have taekwondo club, I have traditional karate, and now I've got kickboxing in as well.
That's genius, man.
So
take the competitors and make them part of your business model.
Well,
how smart is that?
They were paying for parish halls on wooden floorboards with no heating and all. And I just, look, here you go. There's a dedicated facility. Let's work out a timetable. And it's even got to the stage that since I spoke to you in the last 2 weeks, the jiu-jitsu club have approached me and they want to expand massively their timetable. They want to contribute to kitting out the facility, even dedicated more towards not just jiu-jitsu but all martial arts, and they want it to be a small time rival to one of the big franchises here, which is called Straight Blast Gym. And they want to promote my martial arts because they want to promote now mixed martial arts fighters, so they can provide the ground game, I can provide the strike game and the conditioning. And now we've got a business model between us that we're going to branch out, that we can promote the whole lot under one banner now, rather than you do jiu-jitsu, he does traditional karate, and so on. So I've been That's lucky amazing. In that respect, that those are the kind of main, the location I'm in, the facility I have, the population I have, and now the fact that everyone in the neighborhood is under my roof, and it's a good distance to go elsewhere to find that. So not everyone's going to be blessed with those benefits. So I've been lucky in that respect, and I think that's a huge factor in how I've been successful. And coupled with prior to that, before I went full time, I opened a club in 2005, and it was 8 years ago. So it was 10 years before I decided to take the plunge full time, and I kind of done the backbreaking work on establishing myself and getting known. And somebody said to me once, get yourself in with the biggest gossip in the school playground and you'll never have to advertise it in your life. And that's what I've never had to advertise. And I'm actually at the point now, in the last 3 months, that I'm struggling. I've a waiting list of 85 kids, and just trying to traditional karate, and a student base of 185.
Wow.
So clearly, Lenny doesn't have to worry about these sorts.
I know. I worry about it every day. just as a leapfrog from that, I'm now at, like, I'm in my early 50s. I'm going, I can't do this forever, and there's got to be a retirement plan. So this thing now of morphing it into a multi-purpose center, rather than just my dojo, the people under my roof. Now I can kind of look at, well, let's share the load here, and let's share the wealth, and maybe me step back eventually and have a good team working for me, and me just reap the benefits.
I want to thank you, Lenny. You just came up with the next podcast topic. I appreciate
okay.
that.
Okay.
Master, do you have anything you'd like to add to this conversation?
I thought I just did.
Yes, Master.
No, I think everything was covered. And I think, like, there's different facets. Like, I tried to run a dojo myself, like, years and years ago. And it was kind of like what you guys were talking about, where the membership starts to go, and it's like, well, do I want to walk in and train two people because there's a scheduled class, with the hopes that within a year you'll slowly build it up. And I think we were hoping at the time that the classes would fill fairly quickly, you know, even if there was at least 5 to 10 people, and then you grow from there. But it didn't really work out, and then you felt like you were kind of flogging a dead horse to just keep it up, and it became a bit disconcerting, you know, that it's just the same couple people there, and if one of them sucked, then it's like, you know, the class is stupid because you got one guy that can learn and one guy that can't, and that's the only people in the class. And then we started to build up a bit of a kids class, and that's when the parents started getting involved. And because that was my first time, I didn't really know how to deal with parents and their weirdness. So at that point, like, I was like, no, this is how we run it. Even though we were in for profit, I still had the stance that, no, this is how we run it. This is how it'll work, and you'll stay. And they didn't. Because now, in fairness, the opposite of Lenny, it was in Victoria. So it's like the capital city. There was karate clubs all over the place. So people would just say, oh, fine, we'll go somewhere else. So you either had to bend to what people were doing. If you made it too hard, people weren't interested in training. So, and kind of what Claude said, like, if you start to adapt or change your business model, you know, it's kind of a recipe for disaster in a way. So that was kind of my experience with trying to run a dojo. And then there was that whole thing where it becomes not fun now. It becomes a job, and I didn't enjoy training anymore. So it's a tough one. It's quite the juggle to be able to still enjoy what you're doing, still enjoy teaching, and still enjoy the business end, and be semi-successful or even fully successful at it. Like, there's a lot of stuff involved in that.
I'll tell you, drawing on my experience with Bob, actually running a business, not martial arts related, I know that a lot of the stress, and speaking to what Darren just talked about, the way that he felt, you know, it takes a lot of the fun out of it. A lot of the stress I feel with our business comes from my concern that the business isn't doing well. And to draw that over to the martial arts, I can see when you're like, Lenny seems to be in an incredibly, I don't want to say privileged, but certainly fortuitous, yeah, fortuitous position where he doesn't have to worry about the you know, the nuts and bolts of the livelihood being maintained over time.
Yeah, I just want to sorry to interrupt just for a second there. The other is, like, I know what Lenny was saying, and I know the town that the club is in and stuff, but at the same time, if the club sucked, it would not have a membership. There's no two ways about that. Even the location and everything might be just perfect, but if there's nothing there, I don't think people would stay there and train. So there is a testament to that.
I don't know, man. And I'm not arguing about Lenny's club, but just in terms of clubs that suck being successful, there are tons of clubs out there that do suck and are successful. And I don't know that I agree with that. I think that the more, and maybe this is a North American perspective, maybe this isn't applicable in a European sort of context, but North America-wise, the more you give the unwashed masses what they want, the more successful you will be, even if what they want sucks. So I've seen plenty of clubs that in the same context as Lenny, where it's a small rural environment, there aren't a lot of other options. The club is bad. It's just terrible. But they're successful because there just aren't any other options out there. And the people who go don't know any better. Like we've talked about this before. When people go to a martial arts club, they don't know what's good. They don't know what's bad.
But if you take Jushin, that, like at one time it was the only karate club. Then there was two or three. But that's a town of like 50,000 people. Blessington has about, I don't know, 5,000, if that. So
yeah, six and a half.
You can still have a decent club and people aren't going to it. Like that like Jushin was non-profit for most of its existence.
It's still not. Yeah.
And so how do you explain that? Like that town's huge.
I don't. This is the thing. There are so many vagaries and so many, inputs into whether a club is successful or not that it's hard to nail down a foolproof business model. Because we as Darren and my exchange just demonstrates, we've all seen good clubs in rural areas not get enough students to maintain maintain profitability, and I've seen lousy clubs in small rural areas that are completely successful. I honestly don't understand what goes into making a good club. I think if I were to ever open a club full time, which will never happen now, but in my heyday when I would think about it, I couldn't imagine running a club any other way than I thought a club should be run. I was weaned on a certain perspective, and if my club failed because of that, my club would fail because of that. So, okay, Len, any other comments?
I do think, and this is probably going to just really throw a hand grenade into the whole thing, without compromising standards, and this is just from my own personal experience in the last year alone, probably since we've come back from COVID, there's a huge, huge change in society's opinion on training, not just in martial arts, but in other sports, because I'm involved in the soccer club here as well, and particularly with kids. You kind of have to, not compromise, but you have to change the route to get to the end goal. And that's the big one, is what is the end goal? And as one of my black belts has brought this up, he listens to the podcast every week and he goes, you know, he's never really finally say to each other, what is the end goal? Is it to produce a black belt? Is it to produce somebody who likes to fight? Is it to produce somebody who likes point scoring? Is it to produce somebody who likes kata? What is the end goal? And I'm having to look at students on Masco, what is the end goal for this gang? And you kind of have to look at different kids, want different end goals themselves, and you have to find a way to work around that without compromising your standards, but you really got to rethink the way we teach it even, because sometimes the old school values, you're just left with blank faces and you don't have the support of the masses when it comes to, well, this is the way we do it or else. You can still get to that you can still get to where you want to go, but sometimes you have to take a different bit of a path. And I do think that as a traditional art, I find now that there's so much else out there, and particularly mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu and all, karate is getting pigeonholed into a corner very quickly.
That's an interesting perspective, that that, look, I don't know about anyone else, but I was weaned on the notion that the head instructor defines the focus and direction of the club, and the students coming up capitulate to that perspective. You move in the direction your head instructor takes you. And I'm wondering now, in a modern environment, is it more that the students define their own goals and it's up to the head instructor to not compromise, certainly, but to tailor make the training to suit the goals of the student? I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think we touched on that before. I think a lot of it is just the transfer of information nowadays and the availability of it, such as the internet and YouTube and stuff. So before, if you were in a town and there was a martial arts club, whether it was taekwondo, karate, whatever it was, if that was the only one there and you wanted to do some sort of training, that's where you went. And you just pretty much, you were at the mercy of the instructor. There was you didn't know any better. And maybe if there was two or three clubs, you might try each one and see which one you felt most comfortable at for whatever your training you were looking for. But nowadays, you can just go on the internet and you can see all the different training and you know whether, for the most part, whether a club is good or bad. So if you see some good training on the internet and you go up to a club and they're just a bunch of useless people, then okay, that's not where I'm going to train. So people are a lot more in tune to their training now. So if you get a kid in there, maybe that's all he does want to do is point spar. So do you just say, no, that's what we do everything here and you're going to do everything whether you like it or not? And he goes, okay, I'll find a club where they point spar. So I think that's part of it nowadays. I think there should be an element of tailoring the training to the student according to their needs and aspirations, really. Otherwise, it's just like, you know, getting your Bachelor of Arts in university and coming out and going, okay, now what do I want to do? And it's like, I just spent 4 years, and if I want to do something, I've actually got to go for another 4 years to do it. So if you go into training, you can actually pick your training, and that could alter. Once you get into it, you could actually go, geez, I like this kata thing, or I like weapons, or whatever it is, and you can branch off. But I think there should be a certain amount of tailoring in there, as long as it doesn't make the class really difficult to teach because you got 20 students and each one wants a different thing.
Lenny, I've got a question for you on that. What percentage of new students who come to you with a goal or a direction already in mind? And how many or what percentage come and just kind of say, I just want to take karate? You know, because I'm just curious what your perception of that is.
I'd say about 95% come in and say, I just want to take karate. And you've got 5% who say, I want to work on my flexibility, I want to work on my fitness, I want to gain confidence, I want to learn how to spar, I want to compete. That's all in that little melting pot. But yeah, 95% is this, I just want to come and train.
And is there...
That's across the ages.
That's what was my next question was, does that percentage change with kids versus adults?
Yeah, look, 99% of kids up to the age of about 9 or 10, 11 maybe, have just... they've seen Karate Kid or Cobra Kai or something like this, or they've heard their friends are doing it and they've seen them in the gi and say, that looks pretty cool, or they've seen photographs of friends competing and they just want to come along because it's a cool thing and it's in their town and it's not really anywhere else, and oh, well, we want to have a go at that. And the other thing, like, you know, you're driving past my dojo, like a third of the wall space in it is just open glass, so anyone going by can, it's advertisement in itself. You can see the class going on. You go, oh, look at that. Yeah, I fancy a go with that. Like, you know.
All this talk reminds me of topics that we've gone over in the past, and that is of egotistical teachers. And it seems that it brings to mind the image of desperate teachers who want to attract students and try with their charisma and their insistence that they're the best to attract students that way, and that's how they try to funnel the ignorant people out there into their dojo, just with rhetoric, just with their talking, as opposed to Lenny, who says this is what we do, and you know, take it or leave it, and is willing to have them leave it. But I just saw a connection there, that's all.
But does Lenny say that? Like, Lenny just talked about, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Len, but am I right in understanding that a lot of your perspective is, let's let's tailor the training to the goals of the individual when those individuals have goals.
They'll never know that. To me, to them, it's just, I kind of, you get, you know, when you know yourself, when you teach them for long enough, you get a handle on, you know, this kid's going to be a good fighter. This kid just wants to be included. This kid's got zero confidence. And you'll try and suss out fairly quick. And what I do with a lot of my classes, I'll put the really more advanced ones together so we know, okay, this class, we can go hardcore. I'll put the kids that aren't so confident together so we can take them in baby steps that's going to move a little bit, you know. So I'm not kind of diluting classes down and kind of putting groups together that I know, okay, this class I have to take this path, this class I have to take this path. You're never compromising or tailoring as such for individuals as opposed to a group that will take different time periods to get to the same destination. As I say, they're all like a popcorn kernel. They'll pop eventually, but sometimes they need different amounts of heat and pressure, but they'll get there eventually. Some will pop earlier than others.
It's a complicated question. I'll tell you what, guys, let's go around the table once. Any last thoughts on the topic? Because I do want to get to the second half of the podcast. Len, we'll come to you last. Let's start with Claude. Claude, any last comments on this whole topic?
I think we covered most of the things that I was thinking about along the lines of what Lenny was talking about. I think that's somebody that's astute and very good at reading people, having the ability to look at students without them knowing it, kind of catering to what you think they might need or want without changing your dojo. I think if you can do that and continue to run your dojo, that's awesome. I love that. That's about all I can think of.
Darren?
No, I think, again, everybody kind of covered everything. And I just always think there's room for change and reflection and stuff like that. And you can, you know, it's difficult to just do one way. Even if that's the way that worked in the past, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the way that works in the future. So I think everything is organic, or I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for, but like things will grow and change organically and natural, and it's just, okay, yes, there is a traditional martial arts thing and it stems from, you know, however many hundreds of years ago, but life changes, the world changes, people change. So I think you kind of have to adapt with those changes. It's great to keep a lot of traditions around, just like history, you know, keep history around and have history books and teach people about it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to go out and build castles nowadays just because there were castles in the past. Teach people about the traditions, but let's train in the modern ways. That's kind of my philosophy anyway, and I think that's the kind of thing that would work. People are interested in tradition, but they also want to be practical, and they want to do what their friends are doing, and they want to feel like they're progressing, you know, to whatever their potential is.
Yeah, I think Lenny gave a nuanced opinion about all this stuff, and I feel like I don't have the right to complain about what he said what's the C word? That, what do you do with a film when you're
Edith.
Reviewing it? And no, it begins with C.
Critique.
Criticism.
Reviews.
Anyway, I don't feel the right to criticize Lenny because he seems to have it right on the ball. So I'm kind of at a loss here.
Lenny, any last thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'd say everybody has the right to critique or criticize Bob because, you know,
Bob waits till you're not on the podcast.
I know. I mean, you've done several martial arts, a hell of a lot more than I have in other disciplines. Darren kind of said it there, you know, you can adapt without compromise. You can adapt and still get to the end goal. And what I stopped doing was putting a time frame on students going, okay, it takes 4 years to get to black belt, or it takes 8 years to get black belt. No, it'll take as long as they want. And I don't look now as my end goal of producing black belts. I look at improving students, and if they make the path to black belt, brilliant. Whereas I used to think, okay, they should be at this standard by this age, they should be doing this by this time. I've kind of stepped back from that and say, let's improve what they had previously. And if that natural progression and adaptation brings the success in grades, happy days. Every day is a school day. I don't ever go into the dojo thinking I have a handle on this. I go away every week and rethink, okay, what I want to cover next week, how can I do it in the best way possible? And is that compromising it, or is it improving things? And it's a constant spin cycle in my head of how to keep things real, how to gain success and keep them interested and without compromising things. That's the best way I can probably word it. That probably sounds very complicated, but it's the best way I can describe it.
You know, it's funny. Just having listened to this conversation over the last hour, I've had a bit of an epiphany. I've always considered myself a traditional martial arts enthusiast and almost obsessive. I love the hardcore traditional training. And what I've come to realize is it's not the traditional part of things that I'm so attracted to and so drawn to. It's the discipline and the work ethic that actually drives me. I love working hard on the dojo floor, and I love seeing other people work hard, and I love training with people. And it doesn't matter whether it's traditional or what martial art it is, or whether it's modern point fighting. The level of traditional training is irrelevant to me. What matters more to me is how hard people are willing to work in whatever discipline they happen to be following. And I know that sounds pretty obvious, but in my own head, I've just had a pretty seismic shift in perspective. It doesn't matter whether the training is traditional. It matters whether the training is good, whether the training is strong, whether the ethic that's being put into the training, both from the instructor and from the students, is of a level that I can kind of get behind. So, look, just thanks to everybody for helping me make that mental jump. Wow. Okay, folks, we're about an hour in. We're gonna take our traditional break. We're gonna come back in the last half of the podcast, and we'll get on to the other talking points. And that's it. Let's take a break, folks, and we'll be back. Thanks.
Technically, I'm only 45 minutes in.
Okay, folks, we're back from the break. The next talking point is the next series of points are about Kabuto, weapons training in the martial arts. Let's go around the table. We're going to talk about weapons and weapons training in the martial arts. It's something I don't think we've even touched on in any of the other podcasts. So I want to give a shout out to Jason. Jason, this was one of your talking points when you were on and we never got to it. So a little homage to Jason that we're going to finish these off. So
I'm sorry, I missed Jason as well.
Yeah, that's too bad. He was on twice, and those are the two that you weren't able to make it on. Mm. So we're going to talk a little bit about Kabuto. And let's go around the table, and without getting into the specific talking points, because I do want to tackle them one at a time, what are your general thoughts about Kabuto, about training in weapons as a part of martial arts? Bob?
Well, in karate, you do it to be cool. This is a nutshell. In karate, you do it to be cool. In kendo, you do it because that's an integral part of the martial art. And in aikido, you do it because you're supposed to. And it also has great metaphorical value in what the empty hand techniques do. So somebody else take it from there.
Hang on. Sorry, Baba. Right away, I got to jump in and ask you a question. Because I've always heard that the Aikido techniques, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Aikido techniques are touted as being having been derived from sword movement and sword play. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what I meant by my comment.
Right.
Aikido, metaphorically. They have weapons, and they have weapons kata. It takes a more minor role, kind of halfway between kendo and karate.
So weapons training is part of a traditional Aikido curriculum. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question, and this is obviously a question drawing your opinion as opposed to, you know, objective information about Aikido. In your opinion, if they pulled all of the weapons training out of Aikido and just did the empty hand stuff, would it suffer? Would the art suffer for that?
No. No, it's more a conceptual thing than anything else. The way you hold your hands resembles the curve of a sword. That's kind of the extent they go to. when they're talking about their techniques, and you can easily do that without the weapons.
Claude, what do you think about just weapons in general in the martial arts?
Well, I think at the dojo, you've seen me often enough play with weapons. I really have a lot of fun with them. Other dojos that I've trained with, they do introduce the bow staff or the joe staff at about orange or green belt, and they are a requirement for higher belts, and then they are not the most prominent or predominant thing in any of the clubs I've been to, but they are part of it. And I enjoy them. I enjoy the weapons. I just see it as an extension of what we do with the open hand. You talk about Okinawan karate, and when you talk about Okinawan martial arts, it's a mixture of karate, it's a jiu-jitsu, and weaponry. They're sort of three things intertwined, and karate is one component, weapons are another. So I do enjoy using the weapons. We didn't do a lot of line work. I wish we'd done more. A lot of kata and a lot of bunkai, but without doing the line work, working with partners as often as we should, I don't think I ever got really proficient at any of them, but I do enjoy them.
Lenny, what do you guys do weapons at your club, Len?
We scratched the surface, really, and the only reason we brought them in, it was never something that I was brought up with. But we started going to a couple of competitions with a couple of counterparts from the UK, from England, and they had it as an integral part of their katas in competition. And we kind of, again, the kids' ears all pricked up and eyes open when they saw a guy with a katana or someone with a bow staff going, ooh. So we kind of explored it a bit. We got some basics, probably not to the extent where we're ultra proficient at it, and it's something that's... I'm not going to say novelty. I mean, I know I was kind of mocking it when I messaged it, Mitch, but it's that was in the middle of my technical meltdown when I couldn't log on. I think that they're nearly an entity in themselves, that it's hard to incorporate them in a karate class or a karate setup to be proficient enough at them. Like, there's Bob says, kendo is an art in itself, purely with a weapon. So, you know, and I know, and pardon me, I'm probably not up to speed with the proper names for them, for those who are proficient in each one of those, you know, the bow staff, the joe, the katana, the sai, tonfas, so on and so forth. They're nearly a discipline entirely alone. So we scratched the surface, we used them for kata purposes and maybe for competition, and then the odd time at a black belt grade, if somebody, you know, you might throw them a curveball and say, show me this kata. But other than that, we don't go near them. Probably not going to hear them enough, because we focus too much on the rest of the curriculum and as such. But I do think they're enjoyable, and I'd like to know more about them, purely just from a self-interest point of view.
There's an argument to be made that it's just in a karate dojo, time spent with weapons is just time taken away from getting more skillful at empty hand stuff, but somebody else should take it from there.
Darren, any thoughts?
It's a hard one to talk about, because just looking at the talking points, that if we actually went through all those points, that would cover anything I wanted to say. But just in general, my opinion on weapons is... kind of between Bob and Claude, where is when I was training, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was going up through the ranks, there was no weapons until you were either at least high rank or even black belt. Like, nobody did weapons wasn't there. And it wasn't until I had long left the club that all of a sudden they started having Sai seminars and Tomfa seminars, and they started teaching little bits of kata to people, and it became a little bit more part of the training than it was when I was doing it. I always found them, I tried to dabble in them, and I was just useless at it. I just, for whatever reason, I didn't have the coordination, and it wasn't for lack of trying. It wasn't like I just tried it and failed and then walked away. I gave it a go. I just was never any good at it. So, and because it wasn't part of the curriculum, there wasn't a need to try to get better. So you gave it a shot. It didn't work. I enjoyed watching it done properly in a tournament setting, but a lot of the weapons I found were what I enjoyed watching is when you had, you know how they have nowadays the musical katas or the free form or whatever it is, and they can do all the acrobatics and stuff like that. I used to like those in the weapons. But if you just took Tomfa and did a basic form like 27 or Zenshinko Tai or something with Tomfa, I thought it was stupid. It was impractical. It wasn't even fun to watch. And it wasn't fun to practice because I would, like Bob said, it was just taken away from getting better at stuff that was more practical. So I kind of had a love-hate relationship with them. I enjoyed someone that was really good at them and could entertain me with it. But if it was just the sake of an extension of your arms, like Claude said, I had no interest in that. So, and maybe if I had been adept at it, I might have been more interested. But I just find, like, even drumming, I've been drumming for 100 years, and I can't spin sticks. I just don't have the coordination. So it becomes frustrating, and you kind of separate yourself from it. So that I'm a bit biased in that regard because of my lack of ability.
Just on that, I think Darren alluded to a point there. He said he enjoyed the kind of, what's the word you used, Darren? Freestyle kind of cat. I think it's a fine line. I mean, you saw it as well with me, Darren. We attended a competition a few years ago in England, and on one ring you had going on this, it was like, and I don't mean to disrespect anyone with this, it was like glorified baton twirling with the bow staff. It was more
it's totally impractical.
However, on another mat beside us, on the other ring beside us, there's a guy, you know him, Darren, Andy Banks from the UK, and this guy did a katana kata that you were just watching the embodiment of a samurai from the way he approached the ring to his presentation, and it looked like this guy was going to carve you a sundown. It looked like a practical demonstration of a battle as opposed to something that was creative. And that side of it, I thought, was absolutely amazing, and that's why I'm saying it's an entity in itself. And it's a fine line as to who's embellishing it to be a performance enhanced acrobatic thing, and who's actually alluding to, as you're talking about, standards and traditions. And me personally, I prefer the old traditional looking. I know what you're saying, Darren, you do a cat with a couple of tonfa, it's probably not going to look as spectacular. But at what point does it become an acrobatic sport as opposed to staying true to a martial art?
Well, that note, I obviously don't know. I've never fought the guy you were just talking about with a weapon, but there are times if you're proficient at an art and you're proficient at doing a bow kata, chances are I could grab a bow and smash you across the head, and you wouldn't know how to block or do anything with it because you're only most clubs that I've ever seen that do weapons only do weapons kata. Or maybe show you a few techniques, but they never do lines, they don't do any sparring, they don't do any self-defense with the weapon. Therefore, it becomes really just a show. And that's why I kind of use the musical cut or the freestyle. So, like, if you know what you're doing with self-defense and someone hands you a weapon and then you're faced with a guy that does an amazing kata with the weapon, chances are you're going to bash the head and they don't know what they're doing with the weapon because they just know how to do the kata.
The point is well taken when it comes to weapons related to karate, but I'm just going to throw in my two cents about kendo. They have the bamboo swords that they actually fight with. They have the boken, the wooden swords that they do kata with. And my club was a sister club with an Iaido, a sword drawing martial art club that occupied the same space. And that's a whole different thing in itself. That's kata with a live sword, which I found beautiful and would have loved to have participated in, but it just wasn't in my schedule. And so yeah, it runs the spectrum from jerks trying to show off to real meditative endeavors to actual combat.
I got to throw my perspective in here. First of all, Lenny made a brilliant point and a very accurate point that many of the weapons that a lot of clubs do in competition most predominantly Bo, but Sai and Nunchaku and all that stuff, each of those have dedicated martial arts for those weapons completely on their own. Like Bob and Kendo. Kendo is a martial art completely devoted to using a particular weapon in a particular way. I'm going to put out a comment here, and I'd like everybody's reaction to it. Back in the day, back in the 80s, early 90s, my first 10 years in the martial arts, there were a couple of karate clubs around Peterborough. And at that time, Taekwondo had a very big, popular, worldwide name. Everything was Taekwondo back then. And one of the karate clubs had a sign up advertising for their club, and it said, whatever the name of the club was, karate. And then underneath, it had the phrase, concepts of Taekwondo.
Oh, and you said this before. Yeah.
The only reason they put that on there was to draw on the popularity of Taekwondo to get people to come into the karate club. I found that offensive. Clubs that don't train in something but profess to teach it on any level should be ashamed of themselves. And drawing that into this conversation about weapons, entire martial arts exist based on individual weapons. Kudo is the Japanese archery. Bob with Kendo. We've got Jodo. And entire martial arts are based around these individual weapons. So when I see individual clubs or karate clubs teaching, we teach a bow kata. We do bow. No, you don't. You play at doing a bow. It's an affectation. It's an insult to the people who actually study Bo as a martial art. It's like clubs that are in karate going, oh, we've got all the techniques of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in our kata. No, you don't. I hate to break it to all you people out there, but you don't. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and even Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, they are complete martial arts on their own. And for other martial arts to have the arrogance and audacity to pretend that their martial art encompasses all the techniques of those martial arts is arrogance in its highest form. So when I see a club let me just finish my rant.
Yep.
When I see clubs daring to teach a bow kata, like anybody at that club knows the first thing about it, because I'm here to tell you they don't, I find it personally offensive. This is why I don't do weapons. I just don't. Because if I'm going to study a weapon, I'm going to study it as, I'm going to give it the respect it's due and actually study it, not fuck around with it on the sidelines of what we actually do. And pretend that we know what we're doing, because we don't. Oh, well, this person learned a bow kata 14 years ago. They don't know anything else about the bow. And Darren made a good point. There are all sorts of applications of bow beyond kata. There's, like Darren said, there's lines. There's the practical side of it. No one ever does that. We don't do lines with a bow. But, oh, we'll do a kata now and again. I'm sorry. I find it. Sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
I gotta temper this this rant a little bit. I only got to first degree black belt in Aikido, and I only got to first degree black belt in Judo, and yet I profess to teach concepts of both of those things at the martial arts club that we ran together. So,
however, you got a black belt in those disciplines. Disciplines,
dude. You're not technically supposed to teach until fourth degree in either of those things. So
okay,
let's call a spade a spade. I was not great. Technically. All right.
Fair enough. I'm going to come out and say, in as much as you can have that perspective, at least you trained in those martial arts. These clubs that go around that are karate clubs and they go, oh, we also teach weapons. No, you don't. You picked up a weapons kata at some point, either on the internet or at a seminar, and then you have the audacity to teach that weapon kata as part of your curriculum. I can't imagine the arrogance. Like,
let me throw this in the argument, Mitch. First, sorry. When Kenpo arrived in the U.S. when Parker brought it in originally, Kenpo was just known as Kenpo. And he was setting up schools left, right, and centre, and he had Kenpo over the door, and across the street was karate. And he couldn't get anybody in the door, so he's just stuck the word karate beside it, Kenpo karate. So technically, that style is not karate. It's a different martial art. So is he doing Kenpo with, what's the phrase you use, alluding to concepts of karate? So where do you draw
the line?
There's
a different... look, I don't... I can't speak to that example. I'm not going to defend it. Someone who claims to do something that they don't do, is Kenpo karate? I don't know. Was Kenpo, when Parker started it, was it not a subset of karate? Was it something else? Was he intending Kenpo to be a martial art on its own aside from karate? I don't know the answer to those questions. What I do know is if I look, I barely brushed the underbelly of Aikido. I can move a little bit, kind of in the right direction sometimes, because I worked with Bob for a few years. I certainly didn't study Aikido. If I ran a martial arts club, I would never say I teach Aikido. I wouldn't even say I teach concepts of it. Even though I know a few Aikido techniques, I find the notion of pretending to teach something that you have only a superficial understanding of to be an insult to the martial art that you are pretending to teach.
Can I jump in?
We played around with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu all the time.
We played around with judo niwaza. That's different. We never called it Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because it's not. It was judo niwaza.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mitch, I don't know if this was in contradiction to what you were saying or just to put a bit of a perspective on it. But I think, like, for example, a club that I used to train at out in Victoria, the instructor was always into learning new things. So he went and took a Krav Maga seminar, and he would pass on anything that he learned from the seminar to the students. He would do a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu seminar, and he'd try to pass that on. He went off to Tiger Muay Thai, and he came back and tried to pass that on. So I understand what you're saying, if the club professes to... be able to train that to a certain level, okay, that is disgusting, as you said, because they can't. But having a club learn a bit of stuff and pass that knowledge on to the students, there's nothing wrong with that. It's expanding
no,
the students.
But
you don't have to be proficient in an art to pass on any little bits that you've picked up along the way. That's what I said. I don't know if I'm contradicting that or if I'm off topic.
Well, let me speak to how I interpret that. If I go to I've gone to a bunch of seminars and I bring stuff back and that's awesome. Look, to be inclusive of new ideas is a great thing. However, you don't go to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu seminar if you're a karate practitioner, learn a couple of cool little techniques, bring them back to your karate club, and then profess to teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
No.
That's what I have a problem with, when people pick up one little nugget of information, and in the martial art of either studying of a Bo or a Jo, learning a particular kata and bringing it back, that's a nugget. And then saying, we teach weapons here, we teach Bo here. No, you don't. You don't.
Yeah, yeah, I got
and
that. Yeah.
And that's what I have a problem with. Claude, you've been remarkably silent. Thoughts?
I'm absorbing everything you're saying. I am not going to argue your point at all, because I think you make a lot of valid points. I will say that the weapons that we did, especially in the Botokukai system, if we were with the right instructors, we never sparred with a lot of the weapons. I think you could get seriously hurt. When I said we didn't do a lot of lines, we did do lines. So we were going back and forth, and depending on the partner and the level of ability, our lines could be very fast, really hard, and if you fucked up, you got hurt. And we were doing it with the bow, the sai, the tomfa, the joe, and even the sticks. So to say that we were incredibly proficient, I would say we became hobbyists at best. But the thing is, Mitch, when you're saying, and I agree, if you want to become proficient at a single weapon, where do you go? Doing what the Botokukai is doing is giving everybody a flavor of what it is. And if they want to search out a master of a sai or the master of the tomfa, they could search that out. But where else are you ever going to get a flavor or a taste of weapons if sometimes they don't bring it in? Now, one of the things that drives me crazy is when I see sport karate create their own kata. And yes, they're acrobats and they can dance with them. But from a practical perspective of just the weapons that I've handled, they're absolutely asinine and they'd never work.
I'm sorry,
they look awesome in a kata.
Sorry, I don't see the difference. I don't
see the difference. That makes perfect sense.
I think that makes no sense to me. Just is objecting to misrepresentation. That's all he's objecting to.
That makes sense.
I'm actually objecting to a little bit more than misrepresentation. Someone who has done a single bow kata that they learned at a seminar 5 years ago, they don't know anything about a bow. They know a kata. I can teach somebody Taekyoko Shoden, and they take it back to their Aikido dojo, which would never happen because, you know,
in the system.
Here's another way.
The katas that we did were all, they weren't brought from a seminar. They've been part of their curriculum for as long as they've been around. And they were all specific for those weapons. They weren't just Taekyo Shoden and let's turn it into a bow or a joe or whatever.
I can't speak. Sorry, Claude. I can't speak to the experience you've had. I don't want to say it was good, bad, or otherwise. What I will say is that each of these weapons have entire martial arts based around them. A lot of them have as in-depth as the empty hand martial art that we train in. Those weapons have, or those weapons arts have as in-depth curriculum based around using those weapons. And when people pick up a weapon and learn how to swing it a couple of times and pretend that they know about a bow. Oh, I know bow. We teach bow here. No, you fucking don't. You teach a single bow kata. You personally, not you, Claude, I mean this hypothetical individual I'm talking to, you don't know bow.
That looks a lot like
your, don't tell your, yeah, don't tell, the jokes that just rushed into my head. Don't tell your students that you teach bow. Explain that. Look, I will admit up front, I have taught classes at a karate club that were based in Aikido movement. However, the first thing I say to these people is, look, I know fuck all about Aikido. I took a couple of classes once or twice, and I trained with a guy who was a black belt for a while. I have a very superficial understanding of these techniques. Having said that, they're really interesting, and I think they've got some stuff to teach you, so we're going to play with those techniques tonight. I never profess to know Aikido. I never profess to being good at this. So in that format, I got no problem with it. What I do have a problem with is people saying, we teach weapons here. And most of the clubs that I've seen don't. They don't study those weapons. They use those weapons as a jumping off point to sell their karate a little bit more expansively. And I find that personally offensive. I think it's honestly a slap in the face to the notion of Kabuto. Kabuto is the study of weapons, and to know one kata, well, I know a bow kata. Well, congratulations. You're not a student of Kabuto. You don't study it. You've just picked something up someplace and you play with it. It's like me, look, like Bob said, I do some groundwork because I got to a certain level in judo. I have absolutely no right to go, oh, I teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu. No, I don't, man. I fuck around a little bit with some techniques I learned once. I bumped into a guy who knew some stuff, and he spent 15 minutes showing me some things. That doesn't give me the right to say I teach it. I have a real problem with this whole notion of the minimization of an entire martial art so that another martial art can leverage off what that martial art superficially has to offer. I think it's kind of disgusting.
I know in Botokakai, Mitch, I'll never profess to be great at any weapons. I can swing them. I'm comfortable with them in my hand. But they actually do have in Botokakai rankings for weapons. And I think one or two, when I was with them, did get their black belt in weapons. Both of those people, one was a guy and one was a woman, were third or fourth dans in karate. So obviously with them, karate is first and weapons does come second. These people can be pretty proficient with these weapons. The lines we do are aggressive, and depending on the level of skill of the person you're doing it with. As far as sparring goes, that's one thing they've never done. So how they say, okay, I'm going to give you a black belt because, well, you've never sparred. But I enjoy holding them, swinging them, playing with them. I do find them fun and interesting.
Okay, I'm done my rant. Let's go around the table and we'll talk about the first talking point. I know we've kind of covered it a little bit in what we've already talked about. Do you train in weapons? Why or why not? Do you have something against weapons? Do you have something for weapons? Do you see it as something more than a marketing tool? Bob?
In karate, like during my karate training when I was young, this was like 15 to what, 30, we dabbled, and it was a cool thing to dabble in, and that's all I can describe it as now. Kendo school changes that perspective entirely, and that's all I can really say about the matter, really.
I want to add one more little bit to the end of that thing. So have you trained in weapons? Why or why not? On the end of that, is there a weapon that you would like to train in that you think is really kind of cool, and wouldn't it be neat to actually study that weapon? Bob, anything to add based on that?
Well, I started karate because of Bruce Lee, so there's the nunchucks. Mitch, you played around with them for a while, and that was a cool thing to do back then, so yeah.
I've never marketed it. It's something that's crept in recent times, but definitely, I think that I would love to study them as a separate entity, but that's going to take, and again, it doesn't come into my timetable as such. I think the katana, and again, I alluded to a different instructor that we know who did a fantastic kata on it, and pardon my French, and if I get this wrong, Aido, is that what you mentioned it was called, the sword drawing?
I
would love to look at that in more in depth. I think it's fascinating.
Darren?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I trained in weapons, probably based on what you just said about people proposing to be able to teach weapons. So I dabbled in it with an instructor that also dabbled in it. So I never actually learned properly any weapon whatsoever. I did play. As I said, I wasn't very good, so I got frustrated. Is there one I did? I went to a knife seminar once in, I don't know, it was Cali or Escrima. I can't remember which one does the knives. And I found that highly, Cali, highly entertaining, highly intricate, and highly challenging. And I tried to find a club that did it since then, and I can't find one in Ireland. And that would be something I'd definitely like to train in. Both for the intricacies, the art, and 100% practicalities. It encompasses everything I like in a martial art.
Claude?
Well, without expanding everything else that I've already said, I think I put my cards on the table. I agree with Darren. Cali would interest me. And unfortunately, I do know of a club that's predominantly all they do is Cali. Unfortunately, it's in London, Ontario, and it's pretty hard to get there. I'd love to expand on the Joe. I think it's a great weapon because it's a stick that you can carry legally and call it a walking stick or a cane.
Almost the same as a Cali stick, too. I'm assuming you can carry Cali's that.
But you carry those, though, and they'd be considered a weapon, especially if they were in the back of your pants and you pulled them out.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Now,
yeah.
Here's something funny, and this was just, and we drank too much that night. I almost broke his nose. A young friend of mine that's actually training in Cali in London, and he's been doing it now over about 2 or 3 years. We were just playing near the end of the night. We didn't talk much martial arts, but he said, okay, I'm going to, he pulled out his knife, and he said, I'm going to stab you in the stomach, and just, or going to go for your stomach, and I just want to see what you would do. So he was fully expecting me to grab it with two hands. And instead of doing that, I just used my wrist and I knocked his knife away. And then I put my other hand up his nose. The first time I hit it, the first time I was, it was good. The second time I knocked the knife out.
So you put your hand up his nose?
Well, my wrist. I broke his nose. I didn't break his nose the second time.
You're my hero.
Very close.
That'll teach him to fuck around.
He got kind of pissed off because he said, oh, that would work. He was waiting for me to, and then when he handed me the knife, he was waiting. He was going to flip the knife in his hand, come back, and just cut my wrist after I grabbed it. Sorry. I don't know what he was going to try to do, but it just threw him. It was a funny thing.
I'm sorry. Anytime someone comes up in any kind of social situation and goes, I'm going to do this. What are you going to do? I'm like, get the fuck away from me, you douchebag.
Mitch, you got to put it in context. I trained Matt a lot of years when he was younger. We sparred a lot. So, we've got a history. So for him and I to do something like this, probably wasn't the greatest idea to do when we were drunk.
Fair enough, I guess. I suppose.
He just wanted to show me something that he'd learned. That's all. It was cute, it was innocent, and it turned out to be pretty funny.
Let's go around the table one more time. Here's the question. Do you think that there's any value to your training? And obviously, this is a personal opinion question. Do you think there's any value to your training? Do you think your training would be enhanced if you did study a weapon? How would studying weapons enhance your training as a martial artist? Or would it? Bob.
I took kendo for a year and a half, so it was kind of integral. But apart from that, no.
Darren, what do you think?
I just agree with Bob. Like I dabbled in it. You can be entertained by it. Weapons in general, would it affect my training or enhance it? No, not at all. It has the possibility to coincide with, but it doesn't necessarily enhance. If it forces you to do kata because you're tired of doing kata and now you know weapons kata, so it's forcing you to continue doing whatever you get out of kata in general that you might have been missing because you're bored with it, okay, so it might enhance that or at least help it or coincide or whatever. But as far as improving, no, it can't. I don't see it. Unless the weapon has a practical application, like a Cali stick or any kind of stick, a cane, a knife, definitely, tomfa, okay, if you're a cop or something like that. You know, whatever weapons you could incorporate into real-life situations, I think they serve a great purpose. And if you can incorporate that in your training, obviously that's going to help it and enhance it. As far as tradition and interest, if that helps your training because you're interested in something or you enjoy the tradition and you just get some satisfaction out of learning a kata or even learning a few basic moves with a weapon, you're not going to be proficient at it. Maybe your instructor doesn't know very much about it, but he can teach you a kata. If that interests you, you know, that's, I wouldn't say it enhances your training, but if it keeps you interested, I think that's a positive thing. But in general, no. Here, weapons don't serve any purpose unless they're practical, in my opinion.
I can't really add to what Darren said, to be honest with you. He's going to hit the nail on the head. I suppose if it was really, really to say, okay, yeah, be drawn that you have to add something, maybe a little bit about footwork and balance would be the only thing, possibly. And targeting, maybe, because if you're not on target with a blocker, you're not on target with a strike with a weapon, you're going to get messed up. That's about it. That's all I can add.
Claude, any last thoughts about does weapons training enhance your martial arts?
I really liked everything that Lenny and Darren said. I agree. I would have missed not learning what I've learned. I don't try to profess that I'm an expert at anything. I guess it's like the little bit you learned in Aikido. You don't profess to be an Aikido master, but you enjoy doing it, and I see you playing with the moves all the time in the club. I don't think it can enhance you, and I agree that if you spent more time with weapons, it's time you're not training in karate, and you could be becoming better at that, so there is a trade-off there. I agree with Lenny. It's not something that is integral to karate, but I'd still enjoyed it.
I tell you, you know, my whole perspective of the martial arts, and I've been thinking about this for a long time. To me, one of the basic concepts of the martial arts is learning about movement, how to move your body in different ways, how to understand your body enough to move it in different ways. And in that vein, I think weapons do offer a certain value. I'll tell you this much. Look, learning a weapons kata, is there harm to it? I guess not. Just don't profess to teach it. There's no harm in learning a bow kata. I would love, and I don't care what the weapon is, bow, joe, nunchaku, sai, I don't care. I would love to delve into a weapon in the same depth that I train in empty hands. We do sparring. Let's do sparring with weapons. We do lines. Let's do lines with weapons. Like, if we could take the breadth of empty hand training and apply it to a weapon, I'm in. I'm all in, because I think that would be fascinating and awesome, and actually pay a little bit of respect to the form of that weapon. So I think it has a lot to teach. Go ahead, Bob.
It'd be fun to go over a couple of a boken, wooden sword kata from kendo with you.
I'd love to do that. I would. I look.
They're all two man kata. It's not single. You're always.
And you know what?
Opponent.
I'm look. Two man kata, I think, is genius. I think empty hand, like traditional karate, would be benefited greatly if we could take some of our basic empty hand kata and apply it and expand it to be two man kata. So there's always attack and defense and this and that and blah, blah, blah. I think two man kata, I'm starting to think it's the only way kata makes sense anymore. Like doing it by yourself.
We talked about that one time.
We did. I'm starting to think doing kata by yourself is the martial arts equivalent of jerking off. I don't get the point of doing it by myself. Like, why not have somebody throwing attacks and defense?
Sorry,
I don't get it.
I do it with other people.
I don't. I'm sorry. I'm starting to think empty hand kata is a waste of time. If I don't have a resistant opponent throwing throwing techniques at me or blocking the techniques I'm doing, I think we're missing out here. And I think the same thing applies to weapons. If we can study weapons in a combative format, yes, we do the kata, sure. We also do two-man kata. We also do lines. We also do free sparring. I think it adds a whole different dimension to what we do. My mind boggles at the possibilities. I think weapons could absolutely enhance what we do in the empty hand world. Okay, guys, let's go around the table once. Any last comments on anything we've talked about tonight? It's been a little bit of a mishmash. Bob, last comments on anything? The world is your oyster. What do you got?
I don't know. I think we covered all the talking points quite well. I was glad to hear Lenny so comprehensively talk about his opinions about the first half of the talking points. I think the weapons conversation was a very good conversation. And that's really it. I had a great time, and really, that's all there is to say.
Lenny, what do you got?
First of all, it's good to be back. I'm glad
it's good to have you back.
I'm glad
like,
I was worthy enough to be.
Fuck Bob, it's good to have you back.
I'm glad I was worthy enough to be offered a return. I mean, one sense, I can't really discuss weapons enough because I don't know enough about them. So putting that one aside, I think the other side of it, like you look for my input and stuff, we've really only scratched the surface of that. I mean, the whole, we opened up the can of worms of where does succession come in for what you're doing? Are you compromising? Are you adapting? Part-time clubs versus full-time clubs. I mean, we could talk about that for a year and still not come to any conclusions, really. I'm kind of blessed in my own success, and I don't know if that's a true representation of other people that might be in the situation with full-time dojo. So I don't know if I'm looking at the whole thing through rose-tinted glasses. But it's been an interesting one, and as always, I look forward to the next one. You know, that's about it.
Darren, last thoughts?
I actually enjoyed the podcast again because we touched on some of the topics from before, and then we got Lenny's perspective. The only thing I wanted to add is I noticed in the talking points it said, is there a disadvantage to training in weapons? Mm. Now, I think we kind of put a lot of the weapons training down, and people that proclaim to teach it and aren't capable and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think there's a disadvantage. I think if you get enjoyment out of it, and you guys started talking about movement, which I didn't think of, there's probably some positives you can get out of it. So I don't think there's any disadvantage whatsoever. Maybe if that's all you trained in, you might miss some of the other things, especially if you don't have a weapon one day. But I don't think, maybe it doesn't add any value, depending on how you look at things, but I don't think there's any disadvantages. I think we really put the weapons thing down for when that's the feeling I get, and I didn't mean to put it down because I always enjoyed it. I just don't do it, and I don't disagree with the whole training in weapons for any reason, whether it's traditional or whether you think it can be practical or whether you get movement and focus or anything else out of it. So there's just definitely no disadvantage to it. Like anybody that's training weapons. Don't get it into their head that we put it down the whole thing. It's just
I can think of one disadvantage. Many of us have tried nunchaku and hit ourselves in the head or the arm with the bloody things.
Or the groin.
Or the groin.
Just
yeah. I tried. I remember the first time I tried nunchaku it was because Mitch was doing it, and he in my head at the time he was doing it really good, and I'm like, well, I can do that, and I couldn't. And I cracked myself in the fucking head with it because back then you didn't have the nice little rubber ones that they use
exactly.
now.
Exactly, you actually had the fucking wooden ones.
Solid
and I cracked myself in the head. That was it. Like, I'm not fucking doing that.
Actually, I use the wooden ones all the time. The most painful thing is when you're flipping it behind your back to catch it, and it catches it catches your fingertips.
Nope.
Your fingertips. You know that hurts.
The most painful thing practicing with wooden nunchaku is when you swing it around and you bring it up under your arm to catch it in your armpit, but it catches that little notch on your elbow between the tip. My entire arm just goes numb and I draw it. It's awful.
It's no wonder you don't like weapons. You
it's
hurt
horrible.
Yourself.
I keep hurting myself. Exactly. I'm a spaz.
That's
I can't,
clinically
I can't
known
do
as
them.
Your. That's clinically known as your olecranon.
Thank you very much, Claude. Last thoughts.
Okay, I think I've said my piece about weapons. Oh, Bob.
Sorry. No. Go ahead, Claude.
I think I've said my piece about weapons. Oh, Bob.
Oh
no!
For fuck's
just because
sake.
He sighed doesn't mean anything. No. Just jump in and do your bit. No.
Go ahead, Claude.
I think I've said my piece about weapons. I think I'd like to bring another point to Lenny that nobody brought out that you need to congratulate Lenny on, and I hope you don't get a bigger head about this, Lenny. But it's not just that you're bringing in other styles into your dojo, but it's you've got the personality to pull it off, because normally when you get a lot of proficient martial artists, egos start to take over, and working together, I don't think is always the easiest thing to do. Somehow you're even accomplishing that, so hats off to you on that one too.
Claude loves Lenny.
What all I was going to say in reply to Claude is that it would be incredibly narrow-minded of me to be egotistical about styles I'm not proficient in, so that's all.
No,
that's,
I'm even talking Bob, about I, the other but, people getting along with you. Yeah, they might think you're the problem. And
maybe so.
Away.
I just think Bob's
no
reply is,
sort of that.
Is
no,
better.
Actually, Claude makes a really good point there, because like that wouldn't have happened.
Thank you, Darren.
10, 20 years ago at all. Can you imagine? Remember when we were training and everything? If a Taekwondo club opened up, It was all fucking Taekwondo. They don't know what they're doing.
Right, exactly.
And it was a complete rival. Exactly. Instead of going, oh, do they have something right. we can learn? Like, let's all fucking be really good and, and expand our knowledge.
Well, there is a flip side to that. There was a Shotokan club close by, and I invited them as well. And the guy was, oh no, we're not coming in there. And within a month, he ceased to exist. He had no students, and which I thought was such a shame. You know, we could have all been under one roof and had such a fabulous thing to offer the whole community. Like, you know,
way just back when, about 10 minutes ago, I had a serious point to throw in.
No,
that was 3 minutes ago, and that was when somebody commented that weapons training can't be negative because you're learning movement, but gymnastics is movement and dance is movement and. Yeah. I don't think those would be equally beneficial.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
it would. Yes. Which means not. They'd all be equally beneficial in that they wouldn't help.
Bob, I'm going to challenge you on that point.
They do help. So what are you talking about?
Absolutely,
Bob,
help.
When I was training in
Collingwood, does dance help? Would dance help?
Yes. Yes,
there was
would.
A group of dancers from Huntsville that came to train
please.
In Toronto.
Oh, please, and don't start.
Let him finish.
Mitch, mute him. Mute
they
him.
Did
mute
not
him.
Have the
mute
muscle
him.
Memory when it came to sparring.
Mute.
But my God, they picked up the kicks. They picked up the kata. It was amazing how fast they really looked like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah,
it was
but hang on.
They were all professional dancers. I'm not saying they were awesome martial artists.
Claude, you just made an argument about how the martial arts helped them. I'm going to step in and say, sorry, Bob, anything that teaches you movement in a different perspective is helpful. How can you say it's not?
Or flexibility or conditioning or anything like that.
Any art form or any activity. Well, I don't want to use the word.
No.
I'm sorry, Bob, no. I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. I think that... I think hockey players can benefit from learning karate, and I think karate practitioners would benefit from learning how to play hockey. I think there's so much crossover and so much diversity in
you know, that's
how
actually
to
been
move.
Proven. That's been scientifically proven. Like, we don't have to offer opinions on it. It's been scientifically proven. Any MMA fighter trains in all kinds of mad shit nowadays. A lot of it has nothing to do with fighting. Training and reflexes and weird stuff like that. They're not actually fighting anybody to fight. They're training
what,
the reflexes.
What about time
their
taken
movement,
away
their movement,
from the? What about time taken away from the essential movements of what you're doing?
Maybe they complement it, Bob.
Exactly, and it enhances it because you can only if you're doing. Let's say you're just stepping forward with a front punch or a reverse punch or whatever. You can just wait. Eventually, you can only do that as fast as you can do it, and that's it. Just wait.
No!
All right, go on.
Waiting. I'm waiting.
No, you're not. You keep yelling no in the middle of him talking, so you're not waiting. Let the guy finish.
After that, I said I'm waiting! Jesus!
You can only do that as fast as you can with as much power as you can, and that's it. So, but then what? So you've got your reverse punch or your cross punch, whatever you want to call it. You've got that nailed. It's fast. It's as hard as it can be. How can I apply that into an actual fight? Okay, I need to get my timing down. So yes, you can spar with people over and over and over, but your timing is only as good as the person that's throwing the punch and you time to get your reverse punch in or your cross. But there's little reflex things that you can train that work on your reflexes and your timing and your eyesight, your peripheral vision.
Specific.
Exactly. That has nothing to do with a guy being in front of you throwing a punch. So there's
no,
all kinds
I'm
of outside.
I'm saying that you're advocating specific exercises. Not general things from all over the place that will quote unquote enhance your movement ability.
Yeah, I agree, but I think I'm kind of giving a specific point. But it my overall point was that yes, anything that's athletic that requires movement, timing, cardio, anything like that will enhance each other. Like a karate guy that's gymnastics guy that wants to learn karate, that's going to help his gymnastics. A karate guy that takes a bit of gymnastics, that's going to help his karate. They're all interchangeable. Anything that's physical, you can learn from another physical activity, and it'll benefit you.
This is awesome, because over this conversation, we've come up with exactly three more podcast topics.
Oh, just that, yeah.
And we're going to explore them over the next few weeks. Go ahead, Bob.
I apologize for my temper. I don't apologize for. And I look forward to our future discussions. How's that?
Oh, all right, guys. Let's tie this one up. I do want to make one comment though.
That's a sorry, Mitch. Sorry.
I hope we didn't, or I didn't shed a negative light on weapons training, because I think it was Darren who said we kind of painted it in a negative light.
I felt picked on.
I love weapons training, and I hope I made it clear that I think weapons training as an art form is absolutely beneficial, and I think it's awesome and beautiful. Some of the most beautiful kata I've ever seen is from people who are proficient and have actually trained and studied in weapons. So my comments and my rants earlier were not meant to disparage weapon training. They were meant to disparage people who prostituted weapons training for the sake of their own martial arts commercial success. That was my point. So I hope that was clear. Okay, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close. We just had a huge round of last comments, so I hesitate to go around the table again, but I'm going to throw it out there. If anyone has any last comments, now's the time to make them, because we're going to end this one.
Yeah, I humbly acknowledge my lack of whatever it is I lack, and I hope you guys are okay with me still coming on this thing and doing this thing.
Okay, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close. Again, it's the No Mind Podcast. Comments or questions to my personal Facebook page.
It's the 50th No Mind Podcast.
It is the 50th No Mind Podcast. Woo-hoo! I'm actually a little jazzed about that. I'm kind of excited that we've gotten this far. So
I would like to raise a point.
Yes, sir.
What I remember, you've hosted all but one of these podcasts, because Darren did one. And I do recall after Darren's one, you said Bob was hosting the next one.
Oh, God.
Bob, actually...
I didn't say that out loud.
But I talked to Bob about it, and he said he had absolutely no interest in doing that.
Okay, so that's why that didn't happen. I would draw the statement. On behalf of all of us fellow lunatics in this asylum, I want to congratulate you on 50 episodes, and glad that we had some way in contributing to their
oh, are you kidding?
Success.
Some way? Could you imagine if none of you guys came on the podcast, it'd just be me sitting in my little basement apartment going, "Hi, I'm Mitch. I'm doing a podcast." Like, this podcast,
I don't like anything.
Is nothing. Right, I don't like anything. Fuck everybody. This podcast is nothing without you guys. And honestly, I'm kind of on Bob's page. If I didn't get a laugh out of it and enjoy it, I wouldn't keep doing it. So, look, thank you guys for continuing to give your support. I want to thank everybody who's ever been on the podcast. And I'm going to, what's the word? I'm going to thank anyone in the future who might ever come on the podcast, because I'd like to keep these things going forever. So, all right, folks, we're done. That's it. We're finished. Thank you, guys. And we'll see you next time around.
Woohoo!
All right. Woohoo! Okay, we're done.
I missed the sound effects at the end.
Jeez, I got a piece so bad.
No, we're not.
Oh, I did miss that in fairness now. Fuck.
Goddamn.